Okay.
Are you okay with me taking my mask off?
Yeah.
I'm vaccinated and all that stuff too, but.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that would be best for audio too, probably.
All right.
Okay, cool. So first, can you just like state your name and then your involvement with the Frog Hollow community and your connection?
So my name is Nigel Demetrius White. And my connection to the Frog Hollow neighborhood, more so, in addition to just being from Hartford and kind of, you know, passing through occasionally as I grew up, I've more so started getting heavily involved with the Frog Hollow neighborhood as I was working at Hartford Public Library. Working with a lot of my teens, when I was working with U-Media, there were a lot of the teens that we had that would come from this neighborhood, as well as other neighborhoods as well. And I just kind of got to know the Frog Hollow neighborhood through them first, just understanding, you know, what streets they came from and things like that, and then be able to reference those stories or reference those conversations when I'm passing through. And then since then, since switching gears and kind of leaving U-Media, not focused on teens as much, I've been focused on just community and public programming, right? And so I've been doing a lot of support of the Park Street branch as it's transitioned into its new location at the Lyric. And I've gotten to know a lot more people in the community that way. I've had a hand in helping to contribute to some of the murals that have gone up in the Art Box over the past couple of years through the Art for Changemakers programs. Our most recent one was, the one from last year was taken down due to, I think there was some construction needs. But again, we'll keep pushing and doing more. So that's pretty much what my connection has been thus far, and I'm just hoping to grow it.
Can you explain a little bit more about what U-Media is?
Yes, so U-Media is actually a nationally known model. So the model is pretty much a teen and young adult space that runs on another model, called connected learning, right? And connected learning pretty much just means that there are different ways that the staff and facilitators in that space can connect to young people and connect the programs to young people, whether it be connecting it to their career goals or whether it be connecting it to their academic, circumstances or whatever they're dealing with in school or family life, et cetera, right? And so, young people come to U-Media to one, hang out, and again, this will all wrap up, but they come there to hang out, again, just hanging out with their friends, being with their friends, playing card games, playing video games, etc. They can come there to what we call mess around, right, which means just kind of lightly getting engaged and involved with whatever technology or equipment or games or activities that we have going on there, right, just to expand their interest levels.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can also come there and geek out, right, so that they can take whatever their interests are and turn those into real skill sets or real opportunities for themselves. So whether that means that they're coming to our recording studio, right, which is a full-scale industry-level recording studio, and they're learning how to make a beat, right? But the next thing you know, they're making a full album or they're coming there to learn the basics of photography. But next thing you know, they've done photography and they've learned videography, and now they're shooting the music videos for their peers or they're building an app, right? Or they're building some other types of technology that has grasped their attention from when they came in there hanging out. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much what U-Media is. Very cool space for young people. You should check it out.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So did you grow up in Frog Hollow?
No, I didn't. I actually grew up between Clay Arsenal neighborhood in Hartford on the north end and East Hartford myself. So again, for me, the South End and particularly Frog Hollow was almost kind of just like a pastor. Like, I've had family, I've had friends,
mm-hmm.
All my life that have been from this neighborhood. And so, again, I engaged with the neighborhood previously growing up, but I wasn't from here. And I'm not from here, I should say. I'm more so from Clay Arsenal neighborhood.
Okay, cool. And so can you talk a little bit more about how you met Graciela and how the Voices of Frog Hollow project came to fruition?
Mm-hmm. So Graciela and I had the pleasure of meeting as we're both employed at Hartford Public Library. We've recently started working together more closely, because previously when I was in U Media, I don't think the opportunity had really presented itself. But with me taking on a new role at the library, which is program production and engagement coordinator, a lot of my focus has switched to bringing different types of digital resources to the library, obviously creating productions, right, out of programs. That's what the first part of my title is about, creating productions out of programming, right? So that means anything from community engagement, turning community engagement into a short documentary film, right, like Voices of Frog Hollow, or whether that means creating an open source music platform for Harvard-based artists, right? So I do those types of things, and then since I do those types of things now, Graciela and I think we both had a vision for the types of things that we could bring to the new Park Branch as it opened up. Mm-hmm. Me, myself, I'm a filmmaker, so I'm always thinking about what's the vision, what's the image that I can put out, right, to kind of get people's attention, to keep people's attention, or to expand people's attention. And so in this case, it was about all three of those things. It was about getting people's attention on the fact that Park Street was going to be in a new location. There were new things coming with that, right? It's kind of like a shift of the culture for Park Street Branch of Frog Hollow. And again, maintaining the attention to understand that just because we're leaving from here, because there was a gap in between the branches being open, right? The old branch and the new branch being open. So we had to be able to maintain attention. So throughout the summer, Graciela and I were able to work together and do some outreach after coming up with the idea of taking, you know, the outreach that she had been doing, right? The relationships that she had already developed in the community as a branch manager, and taking my vision, right, as far as creating a documentary about the stories of the people. And we put those two things together and said, okay, well, we're looking to hear the voices. We're looking to share the voices of the people in Frog Hollow. Thus came the name Voices of Frog Hollow.
Can you describe a little bit more your experience about, like, going out into the community and gathering these stories?
Yes. So Graciela and I... we did what I'd like to call a very grassroots and on the ground outreach and engagement for this project, meaning that, like, there were a few folks that Graciela had already reached out to prior to us even getting on the ground and getting out, you know, walking around and such in the community. But some of those, you know, fell through, and we had to kind of pick those up at a later time. Some of them we kind of just had to wait a little bit. And so in the meantime, as we were waiting, we would meet at the Art Box every Wednesday morning, starting in, I believe, early July. And we would pretty much just walk down Park Street to these different businesses that Graciela either went to growing up, right, or knew the owner or something like that. She grew up in this neighborhood. Or it was somebody that she got connected to through being the branch manager, right, at the old branch. Because as far as I could recognize and as far as I learned while being out there, Graciela is very ingrained and very connected to the people in the community, right? The everyday people, the people that are in a sense making that neighborhood go round, right? She seems to be one of the people at the center of that and making sure that she's keeping touch with everybody. So again, we pretty much took those connections that she built and walked up and down Park Street, stopping at these different businesses, like Miguel, Monte Carlo Bakery, right, Hip Stop, Urban Clothing Store, and Fiesta Time, right? And there were a couple others as well, but those were kind of like some of our main stops, some of our longest stops. And that was pretty much just how we did it. We went down, we asked folks if they were open to talking, if we hadn't already, you know, connected with them prior. And a lot of folks were like, yeah, we love them, we're for it. The only time we got no's was when people were just like, you know, they were very busy running their business, right? And it was just like, it wasn't really a no, it was like, okay, if we could just catch up another time, right? Because again, all those folks seem to either recognize Graciela, have relationships with Graciela, or just be very open to us and what we were telling them we were there to do.
And so can you, like, go more into, like, the process of
capturing?
What?
I'm sorry, go ahead. I was just kind of trying to read your mind. Are you asking like of capturing the actual?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I'll give you a couple of different examples.
Yeah.
So there was one example. When we went to Aki Makeda, right? We didn't get a full interview there, right? But for me, I think that interview or that footage depicts life as it happens in Frog Hollow and just like it happens in other neighborhoods, right? Whereas Graciela and I walked in, and the thing that was off was obviously I'm the person that had a camera, right? Typically, people don't just walk around with cameras in neighborhoods, like Frog Hollow, I guess. I mean, they do, but it's not like you're walking around just pointing it randomly, right? Like, people have cameras, but you're not. So I kind of, stood out a little bit. But other than that, we walked in. Graciela's, saying hello to folks. And I'm doing my best to speak as much Spanish as I know. I know a little. I think I understand more than I know how to speak. Mm-hmm. So I'm speaking to folks in Spanish. And Graciela goes to the owner. I forget the gentleman's name, but she goes to the owner. And she's just letting folks know, hello, I'm from, she's from the library. And I'm kind of standing back just capturing the whole interaction. Because for me, the whole interaction is a part of the story, right? It's a part of the story of how people engage with each other in this community, right? It's a part of understanding the culture of this community, I guess you can say, right? So Graciela would go and greet folks. I would go and greet them as well in Spanish. And then Graciela, she let the owner know that she was from the library and that we were there to do the Frog Hollow, Voices of Frog Hollow project. And we were just looking to speak to the different business owners and about, how they got started, how long they've been there and such, right? And so the gentleman said something to the effect of like, oh, I've been here X amount of years. And Graciela was just like, yeah, I know. I grew up right on such and such street. And I used to come here and my mom used to own this, you remember such, and he's like, yeah, I remember that person's name. She's like, yeah, that's my mom, right? And so to me, again, it's not something that I'd never seen before, but it was, I love being able to capture that, mm-hmm. right? I love being able to just capture that natural engagement, that natural, correspondence, so to speak. I think I'll come up with a better word later, but to be able to just capture that in that sense of community, right? Mm-hmm. That sense of we all connected in one way or another, right? To me, that was like a visual depiction of that. And so that's one example. And there was another example where we actually did a full interview. And it was, this was with Miss Maria, Senora Maria, at Fiesta Time Party Shop. And that was one of the folks that Graciela had already connected with and spoken to prior. She had already kind of given us her blessing and invited us to come down. So we actually met with her and interviewed her right after interviewing her son, who was right next door, mm-hmm. right? So actually, let me rewind a little bit. We first interviewed Iran. Iran is the owner of Hip Stop, urban clothing store, right? And he's another person that Graciela had already connected with prior to, us coming by that day. We had that scheduled. That day was probably the smoothest interaction because it was just scheduled. They were busy in their businesses, like it was business to do and things to do, but it was early enough to where it was like, okay, the day hasn't gotten crazy yet. So we met with Iran. We interviewed him for about 15 minutes or so. And really the interview was for the most part, just a conversation, mm-hmm. right? I mean, obviously, we were curious about his shop, about his journey to be where he is today and where he's gotten to. And his story was beautiful and amazing and inspiring, all right? But it was just a conversation. Like, we were literally just kind of getting to know each other. And I think, ultimately, that's what the purpose of this project was, right? The Voices of Frog Hollow project. And others like it, I'm sure. I know for myself, there's other projects that I'm working on where ultimately that's the purpose, for us to understand each other more, for us to know each other more, and for us to have a more cohesive society, right, and community. And so I think Voices of Frog Hollow was a prime example of that, especially because of the relationships that Graciela already has developed.
Yeah.
So again, we met with Iran. He gave us that interview, more like a conversation for about 15 minutes. In that time, you know, depending on what's going on and what's being said, I might be capturing B-roll of the shop. I know he had like a very nice variety of shoes on two different walls. So when we walked in, I followed Graciela in with the camera, and I'm kind of just seeing her enter the shop because I also wanted to. There was something to me very important about depicting the process of entering this place of business. Mm. I'm not just showing that we're in here all of a sudden. Like, yeah. I wanted people to be able to, when they see this film, to say, okay, this is what the front of the shop looks like. So if I need to go by there, if I don't know that place, and I'm going to go by there one day, I know to look out for this, right? Mm. So we followed Graciela in, we meaning myself and my camera. And after we, interviewed Iran, got the B-roll shots, his mom, Senora Maria, was pretty much already in his store when we walked in. And so she kind of scurried off through this little side door that connects the two stores, right, to her shop. And at the time, I didn't realize it. Like, I just thought she went through a door, right? But after we're done with Iran, Graciela and I are like, okay, we're going to go to party time. I follow Graciela, and she goes through that door, and I realize we're in the store. In the store, and I'm like, "Oh, she's right next door! Like, that's cool!" Like, oh, and so to me, that was, again, that in itself was, I mean, that wasn't a part of the film, right? But it was a part of the process of making the film. And in that process, it was just again another reminder of. I mean, we're talking family, we're talking a mother and a son, right? But even still, it's community, right? Family members make community as well, right? It's the village, so to speak. And it was just cool to see that even more connected, right? Like, they're, like, from my understanding, and I think the film shows this, but Iran had explained how before he had a store, he started Hip Stop he was selling CDs and tapes, right? On the street as a street vendor. He had like a little, kind of just like a little tabletop thing with his stuff spread out. And then he had a sign that was sitting right next to the street that had an image, you know, it was painted, it had a stop sign on it, and it said Hip Stop, right? And that's how he would get cars to stop, right? So, so again, it was, right, he would get cars to stop, and then he would go sell them tapes and CDs. Next thing you know, he's got clothes. Next thing you know, he's got a store, and I think this was his second location. And now his second location is right outside of his mom's shop, right? And he used to, his when he was a street vendor, he would do his vending outside of his mom's shop, right? So to me, that was a full circle moment that was very important to capture. So again, we went on with Maria, and then we captured her interview. Maria's very vibrant. Maria is she's like a lot of just vibrant energy. Like I couldn't stop laughing during the interview with Maria. You know, there are some of the things that she would say in Spanish, and like I might get a little piece of it and then be able to make out the rest, right? And you could, like, I would start laughing, and you could tell she found it funny that I recognized what she said, right? So it was, for me, again, it was something that I appreciated. Because I'm one that, growing up in Hartford, I'm African American, and so growing up in Hartford, there's always been an abundance of West Indian culture, Latino culture, right, Hispanic culture, right, and so I've always wanted to make sure that I got more of an understanding of those cultures as well. Because though yes, I'm African American, but I also live amongst, I have a bunch of friends and extended family members that are Latino or are West Indian or et cetera, right? And so at the end of the day, it's important to be able to connect to, the people that speak Spanish, even if I'm not a native Spanish speaker, right? It's important to be able to expand my curiosity or kind of feed my curiosity around different cultures, foods, and such, right? So when we went to Aquí Me Quedo, for me, that was important because on the north end in Clay Arsenal, we have Akeem Ghetto as well, right? It's that same place. And so it was cool to be like, oh, I know Akeem Ghetto. Like, I grew up going there. Like, after my football games, I would go there. Or, you mean? And so it's just important to be able to connect throughout the city or throughout the state or throughout the country to different people that that are already connected to us in ways that we might not even recognize. So, again, I think working with Maria and interviewing Maria kind of gave me that feeling, right? Gave me the feeling of appreciation for other people's cultures, right? And a desire to want to engage, right? Not to taint their cultures or to kind of take it as my own, right? I'm just a visitor in a sense, but being able to just understand what Maria's saying, even when she didn't necessarily expect me to, and then seeing her enjoy that I understood it, that was something that I really appreciated about that time. And then beyond that, again, Maria just has an abundance of knowledge and history about the Frog Hollow neighborhood. She told us about, you know, the Park Street festivals and all of these things of you know, yesteryear, so to speak, that I think are very valuable for today and for the future, because I think some of those things are things that we can kind of either bring back, right? Or even if we don't bring them back, we can kind of use those as platforms to build onto new ideas, right? And I think it's a lot of information that folks like Maria have that the greater community needs to know and have access to. And so hopefully, again, Voice of Frog Hollow is one of those things that will help people start to gain some access to even a little piece of that information, right? So that was another example.
Yeah. You kind of touched on this, but you mentioned that you're a filmmaker. So why was it important for you to use videos as, like, the medium in which you guys were presenting this? Or was there any other, like, kind of idea or front approach to this project?
Well, I'll answer your first part of that question. For me, it's important to use that medium because for me, films or video, right, however you want to look at it, to me, those give you the most, they feed more of your senses than a lot of other mediums, I think, right? And I say that meaning, like, whenever somebody's watching a film, if that film can depict, let's say somebody picks up a rose, right? Or you know, the character in that film is smelling roses, right? You can't necessarily smell what that person's smelling in that moment, right? But you know the idea of what a rose smells like, right? So in a sense, it's not impacting that sense in that moment, but it's engaging the thought or the understanding or the concept of that sense, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So it's engaging the concept of smell. It's engaging when you see somebody, you can be watching a silent film, right? And if somebody's has their mouth wide open and they, you know, they're straining, right? And in your mind, you can tell that they're yelling, right? So in a sense, it's not, no, you're not hearing anything, but it's still engaging the concept of that sense, right? And so for me, obviously you can see things with film and you can hear things more times than not. But for me, it just feeds the most senses, and therefore it allows us to engage in ways that I think other mediums may be limited, right? So that's, for me, I think that's what makes me enjoy creating films, right? I think I became interested in filmmaking simply because of wanting to make sure that I was able to tell the story of Black and Brown people in its entire truth, right? Or excuse me, depict the story of Black and Brown people in their entire truths. And in addition to that, I think just other films that I've seen before for me have inspired me, just I'm sure as they have for other filmmakers. One of them being my favorite film of all time, Do the Right Thing, right, by Spike Lee, which, again, that's another example of a film that so truly depicts the experiences or some experiences of Black and Brown people in America, right? And not just Black and Brown people either, but for me, that was my focus. That was one of the films that showed me, like, you can have a story, right, that you, in a sense, quote unquote, made up, but tells the truth about somebody, right? It gives somebody's narrative, so to speak, and you can be creative in doing so. So for me, I've been an artist since I was in like seventh grade, and actually I started as an artist when I was in middle school, the summer before eighth grade, and I was at like a summer program right down the street from Trinity College at the Learning Corridor. And I remember that summer I would like finish all my work for the for the classes early, and next thing you know, I was just drawing my name. So I started from that point, right, and then into the school year, and then throughout the next couple of years, I started my artistic journey with graffiti, right? And for me, I love cities, right? I'm a city boy. I love the urban community, all of the little nuances that make the urban community, right? Even some of the stuff that isn't so, quote unquote, good, right? And so for me, I in loving that, I also have a love, a very huge passion for hip hop, the culture of hip hop, right? And the origins of hip hop, right? And one of the nuances that kind of speaks or contributed heavily, right, to what hip hop is and what it became is New York City, right? And New York City's urban culture and the graffiti and all that stuff. So for me, I was just intrigued by that because of my interest in hip hop. And then from that, from drawing graffiti and just drawing my name, I went into eighth grade drawing everybody's names, all my classmates' names. That's how I made money. As an eighth grader, right? I was buying my cookies at lunch because I was able to draw somebody's name two periods before. And then I went from graffiti to wanting to make sure I wouldn't be pigeonholed, so to speak, and that I could do more than just graffiti. So in high school, I was drawing everything. I was drawing everything, and then I went from drawing to airbrushing, and then that's how I really started making money from art. I remember the first time, to this day, I remember the first time that I believe that I could actually make a career or make money from art was you have the pep rally and Spirit Week. Oh, yeah. Spirit Week, right? And I made, the first day of Spirit Week, I made like $280, right? And this is at school for, 7 hours or so. I made $280 that day. And I hadn't even done any of the work yet. Like, this was all people paying me stuff before I even. And so from that point, I think that's where I fell into art as interesting, as something that I enjoyed doing, right? Something that I started to love, but also as something that could create opportunities for me, and for those around me, right? And after that, after graffiti and airbrushing and all of that stuff, I kind of dabbled in fashion design a bit for a while. And then in 2015, myself and my then best friend, we created a clothing brand called Years of Progress, YOP Clothing. It's still around, actually. And the purpose of that was to create urban clothing, right, to, as I mentioned earlier, to gain people's attention, right? Because the clothing and fashion and what people, looked at as cool or hot, whatever you want to call it, young people, that was what had their attention. So whether it was fashion, whether it was social media, whether it was whatever, that was going to have their attention, right? Yeah. And so for us, it was about incorporating positive, uplifting, progressive messaging into the fashion that would already get the young people's attention simply because of the design, right? And so we did that with YOP. That was a huge success. We had a weekend at Salvin's when Salvin's was still here. The legendary Salvin's, I should say, and we sold out. We had a collection of like a couple hundred pieces, and we sold out. We were supposed to be there Saturday and Sunday. We sold out Saturday. We had events at Yargo Stadium. We sold out. That like the YOP was great. And so, long story short, I've kept going from there. I moved on beyond, not beyond, but just kept going from YOP, and because of YOP, I picked up a camera, right? Because I wanted to make sure that I had quality photos for our marketing and things like that. And so I taught myself photography with the help of some of my peers and my friends and such. But I taught myself for the most part. I shot my first film, I guess, for that brand when I shot like a little commercial. I think it's still cool to this day. And after that, once I left YOP, I was like, okay, what's next as far as my creative plan or my journey, so to speak. So I kept shooting photography or street photography because for me, again, I reverted back to what originally caught my attention as far as art, right? But now it was just through a lens. And I love photography. I still shoot photography regularly. But I realized as I started developing stories in my own mind or understanding what I wanted to share and what I wanted to tell the world through my images, I realized that I needed to be able to engage more senses, right? I needed to be able to do more than just show a still image because I think it's harder for some people to capture an understanding or a meaning behind a still image than it is, obviously, motion pictures. So that's how I landed on filmmaking, and all the other inspiration that I mentioned is what keeps me going.
Very cool. I have like a few like details. So at the Learning Corridor, was that like a school or was that like an art program?
No, I think it was like a summer school type program. Yeah. My mom had put me in because I was, I needed to stay busy.
Yeah.
So my mom put me in this like summer, and I was so mad at her. I was like, summer school?
But something good like came out of it.
I'm very thankful
to
my mom for that because everything happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that now.
And would you do graffiti around like the Learning Corridor?
No, I was honestly, when I started, it was just like at that point, that was literally the beginning. Like I was just on a piece of paper doodling. You know, I could, if I still had that stuff now, I'd probably look back and be like, oh my God, right? but that was, again, that was in a sense the essence of my artistic journey, so to speak. But when I got to high school, that's when I started getting up, so to speak, on walls, like, you know, doing throw ups and pieces. Even I did one or two pieces. I won't say where, but I did one or two pieces when I was in high school, like out and about. Those were exciting. Those were fun.
Is there like a graffiti? I know with graffiti there comes like a community kind of like with. So was there kind of a graffiti community that you interacted with at all or not really?
Not really, no. Because honestly, at that time, I wasn't. excuse me. At that time, I wasn't as connected to the Hartford art scene as I am now. Like, because really, when I was in high school, like middle school and high school, growing up, I was more of an athlete than an artist. Like, I played basketball all of my life. And so when I started becoming an artist, I was still playing basketball, you know, travel league and all that stuff. So that, I think that was, sports was still my focus as far as extracurriculars, right? It wasn't the art, I just kind of did it when I wasn't doing anything, right? When I was just kind of sitting there, not thinking of much. And then again, I started doing it for money. But for me, it was more like, all right, it's time to work, right? And I enjoyed working, but it was time to work. My free time as far as organized and intentional extracurriculars was sports. So.
So you kind of even talk about how like you started fashion because like it drew people's attention and like this idea of drawing people's attention with art.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you think draws people's attention in Frog Hollow?
What do I think draws people's attention in Frog Hollow? I think it depends on the person.
Yeah.
I think if we're talking about the people that live in Frog Hollow. I think people come to live or people have come to live in Frog Hollow because it already provided them with a sense of community before they even settled in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of folks if we're talking history, right, a lot of folks who came to the Frog Hollow neighborhood, the Clay Arsenal neighborhoods, the Upper Albany neighborhoods, et cetera, they all came as a result of the tobacco field work, right? And then they stayed, and then their families grew, and then generations and generations, they've been here, and we've been here, right? And so I think, again, that's kind of the origin. But then you have folks that are not necessarily a part of this community that come here for anything between the food, right? Because you can find so many different types of food in just Frog Hollow, right? Some people come for just action. Like, some people love city life and the hustle and bustle, right? And so Park Street is somewhere where you can find music playing somewhere. You can find, right? You can find food at some cool or delicious or lively restaurant somewhere. There's, you know, shops all over the place. And so I think there's, again, depends on what someone is looking for, but I think there's something for everybody mm-hmm. in Frog Hollow, right? We're right in Frog Hollow with Trinity College, right? And so I think a lot of folks that are new to the community, right, get introduced because they might have come through Trinity, right? And so they've been introduced to the community in that way, which I think is a great thing because, I mean, I think that happens at all these other colleges. Like, any college that people are not from right there, they're getting exposed to this new place, and now the value of that place is more widely known, right? It's more widely appreciated and valued and et cetera. So I think typically, as long as people are entering a community, obviously it's okay to benefit from this community, right? Like, you can come here and benefit simply by getting a meal, right? You can benefit simply by having a conversation with somebody. But I think as long as people are there to benefit the community and the people that have made that community what it is, I think that is something here for everybody. So I hope that answers your question.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so turning back to, like, the Frog Hollow storytelling project, were there any, like, recurring themes or, like, ideas that came up across the different people you talked to? You kind mm-hmm. of touched on the story, but if you could just, like, expand a little more.
Yes. I'll start with this. There was a person's name that kept coming up. It was a gentleman I haven't had the chance to meet. Actually, excuse me, there were a couple of names. But first, I'm going to shed light on this gentleman, Celestino. I did not have the pleasure of meeting him. I honestly don't know that much about him, but I do know that everybody that I've heard his name from since we started this project in early July, they've praised that guy. They've praised whatever work that he's done in this community, right? And from my understanding, he is and was a beacon of light for this community, mm-hmm. right? He's somebody that uplifted everyone around him as much as he could and as often as he could. And he was not shy about building for, fighting for, uplifting for this community, right? And so to me, even though I didn't have the chance to meet him, to continuously hear his name during the filming of this, right? Senora Maria from Fiesta Time, she mentioned him. A gentleman that we interviewed, I think it's called Favorita Barbershop, he mentioned Celestino, right? And when that guy heard that Celestino had passed, because I guess he didn't know that Celestino had just passed in the past, like, 2 years due to COVID, right? And so when he heard about it, right, he's just like he was, you know, he was able to hold himself together and such, but he was just like, you could tell he was just like, wow. He was like, what? He was like, Celestino, no way. Like, he's like, that guy changed my life. He's the reason why I'm who I am and all this other stuff, right? And so for me, it was beautiful to be able to hear that, right? Because I didn't know this guy. I never heard the name before. And so I think that, not that his name is a theme, right, but he's just somebody that continuously came up. But other than that, I would say, and then there were other names again, as the N. Alfaro's, the Leticia Coros, right, who I know very well. She's my supervisor and a huge supporter of the goals that I have and things that I look to do at the library and through the library. And she's a hero of this community, right, as she was named this past weekend as well. But in addition to the names and the people, I would say one theme that continuously came up and that was continuously mentioned, right, it's kind of, I hate to be redundant, but the the theme of community, mm-hmm. right? There was Senora Maria from Fiesta Time mentioned a lot about how there were a lot of different initiatives in the, you know, in the past and still to this day that people came together on, right? So she talked about the, again, the Parkville Festival. She talked about how different people pitched in and different businesses pitched in for the sake of that festival. So the whole community, so all the people from Frog Hollow could benefit, right, and enjoy that day together. They talked about, right, the types of meetings that Leticia and El Faro and other folks would have at the old Park Street Branch Library, right, for the sake of advocating for a new branch, right, mm-hmm. that we now see, right? You heard a lot about, again, with Iran, right? Iran talked about folks that would come by his street vending spot, so to speak, right, when he started. And those folks still come to his shop today, mm-hmm. right, to his store today, to his brick and mortar today. So it was a sense of community. That was a reoccurring theme, right? I mean, I think that's even the reoccurring theme now. Like, that's the whole reason why we're doing this. That's the reason why, you know, Trinity College, you know, Sina and have come together to do this project to uplift and contribute to community, right, and to expand the understanding and the notion of community here in Frog Hollow. So that was the utmost reoccurring theme.
And was there anything surprising in the process?
Surprising
or like that stands out? You've touched on a little, some moments that have stood out to you,
mm-hmm.
or maybe that you also have talked about this a little bit, but any other moments that really impacted you or that you've learned from?
Something that impacted me very heavily was the first interview that we did, and that was with a lady named Imelda. I'm forgetting her last name right now. Forgive me for that. But Imelda, she runs the it's kind of like a almost like a thrift shop, right? But I believe it's free for community members at the St. Anne's Church. Or St. Anna's Church, I believe it's called. Graciela had given me some, you know, insight to who she was prior to us arriving. I don't know if y'all want me to say this, but she's undocumented. Is that okay to say? Can that be clipped?
You don't have to say her name.
Yeah, I don't know her last name anyway, so...
Yeah, we will protect that.
Yeah. And she's very protected in the community as well, so it's not...
Okay.
Again, I think... Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out... I'm trying to mitigate how to do that. But long story short, she's somebody... Imelda is somebody from the community that... has risked a lot to give herself and her family and those that she loves... better opportunity in the life in this community, right? In this in Frog Hollow. She's somebody that the community has ultimate and enormous respect for, ultimate and enormous appreciation for, because Imelda, per my understanding, has fought for the community, has spoken for the community, has given to the community tirelessly, right? And continues to do so. Again, she runs that thrift shop, and from my understanding, she is one of those people that knows everybody,
mm-hmm.
right? She makes her business to build these relationships so that the people that she's engaging with that may need help know that it's okay for her, okay to come to her for help, right? Or okay to receive help from her the same way that she's allowed other folks to help her, right? Allowed other folks to protect and help her build up. For me, that was something that stood out because despite the circumstance in which Imelda exists here in Frog Hollow, right, she's a powerhouse. Like, she's to me, I look at, I'm going to go on a rant. I tend to look at folks who do the work in the community, who do the work for the people, who, as I tend to say, who are of, for, and by the community, right? I tend to look at those people as giants, right? I tend to look at those people as, in a sense, in some cases, mythical figures. Mm-hmm. If I didn't know, right, if I didn't know Leticia Cotto, right, Letty, you know, what I heard about her during the presentation on Saturday, I might have, that might have had me looking at her like, oh my goodness, right? Like, who is this person, right? But thankfully, I've had the pleasure of knowing and being, in a sense, under her tutelage, right, in recent times and continue to. And so when I hear of people or when I meet people like Imelda, right, after hearing a story about them, or when I meet people, right, like for me, you know, on the North End in Clay Arsenal, one of the giants for me is, who a lot of folks may know, and I'm sure he's had an impact on Frog Hollow as well, or worked with Frog Hollow in some ways, right, is a guy we call Brother Carl, right? And Brother Carl is one of the elders, as far as I'm concerned. And just like the Leticia Cotos, just like the Ana Alfaros, right? Just like the Celestinos, et cetera, et cetera. And it's, again, there's a million names I can put out there. But just like them, for me, I looked at Brother Carl as a giant because of the work he's done for the people, right, in the community. And so having this relationship with Letty, meeting Maria, right, who's been at the center of all of this, right, and is the keeper of stories and is the keeper of truth, is a keeper of truth, I should say. For me, I was in awe. Like during this project, I live for community. So during this project, I felt like I was at home, right? I mean, aside from getting out of bed in the morning, I felt like I was right at home, right? And so, I was humbled by the opportunity, mm-hmm. humbled and very appreciative.
And so now that you've spoken a lot about how it's impacted you, mm-hmm. what impact do you hope it has in the community and for people outside the community?
The impact that I hope it has on the community, that I hope Voices of Frog Hollow, the impact that I hope the Voices of Frog Hollow documentary has on the community, on the Arthur community, on the Frog Hollow community, I hope the impact is that of greater understanding, right? Meaning greater understanding of one another. I hope that, you know, my African-American people, my West Indian people can see this film, and see their own communities in it, right? I hope the people in Clay Arsenal or the people in Upper Albany can see themselves in Frog Hollow, right? Because it's the same, right? It's the same, it's just a mile or two apart. I hope that with that understanding, we can, within Hartford, right, first, I mean, I want this for the world, but within Hartford, you know, for us, that we can build a greater sense of cohesion, a greater sense of togetherness, as opposed to feeling like we are competing, right? There are powers that be in our city, around our city, outside of our city even, that benefit from our community, right? And that's okay in some cases, but I think ultimately our community needs to benefit a lot more first. And so I'm hoping that the powers that be can be either hopefully just inspired, but if not inspired, pressured by other folks who are inspired by this film, right, to contribute to the positive change for the people who are in this community, who have made this community what it is, and not just for the people who are looking to come to this community, right, to just benefit off of this community and not give back to the people who made it what it is. So I'm hoping that this film will create change and inspire change through cohesion, understanding, and those things. Cohesion and understanding.
And how do you see the project continuing?
So the project, Graciela and I actually already have plans for the project to continue. We actually, this past Saturday during the Heroes Celebration at Park at the Park Street branch. I had the pleasure of interviewing Luis Coro. That's Leticia's brother. And he's another gentleman from the from the Frog Hollow community that, from my understanding, is known very well, has had a huge impact on the city and this community as well. He's still somebody that contributes to this community, even though he's not right here all the time. And so, yeah, I had the pleasure of meeting him and interviewing him. So his interview, as well as others that are still to come, will be put out in a episodic method, so to speak, right? So the plan is for, as I wrap up this partnership with HPA TV, who will be broadcasting, you know, a number of Harvard Public Library programs and, you know, announcements and public service announcements and such. The plan is to get the documentary that you all have seen, I think, clips of, to HPA TV so that they can broadcast it and premiere it to the community on one of the local channels. And then beyond that, whatever interviews that we get, I look to, in a sense, put two interviews together, so to speak, make an episode out of those, right? With more B-roll that introduces the overall city, and continue to put those out through HPA TV and whatever other platforms we can get them to. Because I think the more platforms that we can get Voices of Frog Hollow to, obviously, the more we have a chance of more people seeing it and therefore impacting more people positively. So,
Those are all the kind of general questions we have. But is there anything else that you wanted to share with us before?
If we could go back just the beginning. So you grew up in Clay Arsenal, but what were your kind of perceptions or interactions with Frog Hollow growing up?
So my perceptions of Frog Hollow growing up. Well, it's interesting because I didn't know the different neighborhoods outside of Clay Arsenal. I didn't know the neighborhoods' names until I became a young adult, right? When I came back to the city after going to college and such. But my perception, I think I always looked at the South End as the South End, right? And so for me, my perception was like, okay, that's the side of town where most of our Latino people live. That's where I can go get empanadillas, right? Because I loved empanadillas. Like, for me, I have a thing for beef patties. Excuse me, Jamaican beef patties specifically. And empanadas are empanadillas. And they're very similar, right? So that's funny. But long story short, I knew I could always come to this to the South End side of town, specifically at Quimiquero, to get the empanadillas, right? And then as I got older, into my teen years, I would come here and hang out with friends. And for me, it was just Hartford. It was the side of town that I didn't grow up on, right? That I just was either curious about at times, depending on what was going on, or that for me, it was just kind of provided a different culture, a different perspective, because the fact that it was, you know, predominantly Latino, right? And on the flip side, where I was from was predominantly African-American and West Indian, right? And so I think it was different perspective. It was like, okay, like I when I was in high school, I dated a couple girls that that lived in or right outside of Frog Hollow. And so again, for me, it's like, when I was younger, girls' moms always loved me. Like I was the nice young guy and stuff like that. And so I would always get food whenever I went to, you know, a girlfriend's house or a friend's house or something like that. I was always getting food and I was always getting full. And anytime I would go home after, my mom might have dinner done and I wouldn't be eating, right? So because I'm full already off of empanadas or rice and beans or platanos, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so, it was just for me, it represented another side of Hartford. It represented Hartford having even more to offer, right? But again, as I learned about the the neighborhood names. I just was very curious about how these names came to be, how these neighborhoods came to be what they are, mm-hmm. how these neighborhoods came to have the cultures that they have, right? And I'm still curious about some of that because a lot of it I still don't know. I know a lot more than I did, but I'm just still very curious because I'm very intrigued by how someone's story can turn into, can develop somebody else's story, right? Like all of our stories are created because of somebody else's story who was created then by somebody else's story and so on. And so for me, I'm always very intrigued about understanding how and where and why we come from. So that's my perception, or that was my perception. And to answer your other question, I don't think I had any other things to mention or answer. I don't think. But yeah.
Awesome.
That was it for me. I hope I answered all your questions.
Yeah, no, this was really this was really helpful. Like, you gave us so much new places to explore.
Thank you so much.
Like, really looking forward to Tech Tune and like see how the project continues. When is that documentary coming? Or like, do you know, like,
I don't have a date yet, but it'll be, we're in November, it'll premiere before the end of the year. As long as HBO TV doesn't have any crazy things going on for holidays.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll premiere by the end of the year, and then the episodes, we'll start shooting those more than likely at the top of the year.
Yeah.
Those ones will be a lot more organized, and they won't be as they call a run and gun. Like, it won't be us just making moves and shooting as we go.
Mm-hmm.
It'll kind of be us scheduling things. We're going to have a space where folks are sitting.
Nice.
Makes my process of posts so much easier.
Right.
Yeah. How many people have you guys, like, interviewed so far? Or, like, done videos with?
7.
Okay.
We did 7 official interviews. But we also had those kind of like in between transition points, like Akeem and Ghetto, right?
Yeah.
Which wasn't a full interview, but that was still interaction that I'm gonna keep as transitional pieces between one interview and another.
Mm-hmm.
So,
cool.
Yeah, I think altogether there may be like a good 10 or so people that are on film for that project. But interviews, I think, are 7.
Awesome.
Cool. Mm-hmm.